are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. And in Auburn on ESPN 106.7 or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7500.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope everyone is doing well on this overcast Wednesday afternoon in Auburn, Alabama. And to those of you listening on Fox Sports Central Alabama up the 280 corridor, we hope all of you are having a wonderful week so far. We've got a great show planned for you guys today. Coming up at 2:30, we have Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer joining us to talk about the latest roster moves inside the Auburn program. We'll be talking about Kobe Hudson's departure from the program, as well as Shedrick Jackson's announcement today that he will be returning, among all of the other things going on with Auburn football. Dreshawn Miller, Nick Eason, all the latest storylines going on in Auburn football. In the second hour, we're going to have Jacob Hillman, Auburn Jungle president, that is the Auburn student section, to give us the latest going on inside the Auburn basketball program, as well as the wonderful fan support that this team continues to receive on a gamely basis. We've got a great show planned for everybody today. And if you want to call in, phone lines will be open during the breaks. I'm the only one in the studio today, so if you've got to call in, we want you to call in. We want to hear from you. Call us during a commercial break here on the Wednesday edition of the show. Number to call is 334-321-1390. Hope to have all of that resolved going into next week. Just keeping everybody updated here with the start of the new year. We're going to open up today's show breaking down the Kobe Hudson situation. Yesterday's show was pre-recorded, so we didn't go into great detail on this situation. And I want to kind of update everybody on where we're at right now with the receiver room now that Shedrick Jackson made his announcement that he will be returning, which originally, before Kobe Hudson announced that he was kicked off the team and that he was departing from the program, Shedrick Jackson's return wasn't as vital. But today, that was huge news for the Auburn program that Shedrick Jackson opted to take his COVID year of eligibility and play one more season with the Auburn Tigers. Going back to the Kobe Hudson situation nonetheless, what do we know? And this is going to be really quick. This is going to be really brief. What do we know? We don't hardly know anything about this. Hudson said on his Instagram that he was kicked off the team. Why? We don't know, and I don't expect to find out. So I'm not going to speculate on this. It's not our place to speculate on those types of roster moves, those types of things going on. So we don't know a lot about the Kobe Hudson situation other than he's gone. And now Auburn has to move on in a receiver room that's looking pretty bare for the second straight season after several departures. Now we know that two of the top three receivers for Auburn are departing from this past year's football team. Does anything about this concern me? Still breaking down Kobe Hudson's absence from next year's team. Aside from Auburn losing two of its top three receivers from this past year, no. So what I'm talking about is from a culture standpoint. We had Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com on the show yesterday, and I asked him the question about a potential fallout inside the locker room, if there was going to be any at all. And he said that there wasn't anything to worry about. At least from his view, there wasn't anything to worry about there on that issue, because this is just normal with coaching transitions. Some guys fit, some guys don't. That seems like this is the case here with Kobe Hudson. Nonetheless, it is important to ask that question, and it is fair to ask that question considering several important figures inside that offensive room have either been let go or they've gone on their own accord this season, namely Bo Nix and Kobe Hudson. And then you also talk about the coaches, Cornelius Williams and Mike Bobo. So when you break that down, and you see the guys that have left, and not a whole lot has come in on the offensive side of the ball just yet. The transfer portal is early, and that is clearly a concern for this coaching staff. And I believe that they've got a plan, and I believe it's all going to work out just fine for Auburn on the offensive side of the ball. But the reality is, here early on, more have left than come in on the offensive side of the football, whereas the defensive side, that has not been the situation. It's important and fair to ask that type of question, but I imagine all of it will be just fine. The sky is not falling on that side of the football. That brings up the last question in breaking down the Kobe Hudson situation in Auburn's receiver room. Where is Auburn's receiver room moving forward as far as players returning what they have on the roster currently right now in the way of scholarship players? Before today, we were awaiting Shedrick Jackson's decision. He announced today that he will be coming back. So now let's look at the departures that we know will not be on the team next year. Demetrius Robertson, 37 receptions, 489 yards, 13.2 yards per catch, 4 touchdowns. Kobe Hudson, 44 catches for 580 yards, 13.2 yards per carry, and 4 touchdowns. And then Kalen Newton, who had just 1 catch for 31 yards, which obviously is 31 yards per reception. That catch, I believe, came in the Alabama State game. So those are the three that you're losing. Unfortunately, those are two of your top three pass catchers this past season that will not be coming back. And it was a pretty bare room going into this year regardless. But you do have Shedrick Jackson coming back. He had 40 catches this past year for 527 yards, 13.2 yards per catch, and 1 touchdown. Oh, the statistical anomaly that it was that Auburn's top three pass catchers all averaged 13.2 yards per catch. That's just a fun fact there. But Shedrick Jackson was second on the team in receptions and second on the team in yards. He was third in receptions for scores. Looking at other guys returning, Javarius Johnson was fourth on that list in terms of receivers that were pass catchers. 19 catches for 274 yards, 14.4 yards per catch, 2 touchdowns. He had 2 rushes this year for 59 yards, 29.5 yards per carry, and 1 touchdown. And then you also have Malcolm Johnson Jr. coming back, 6 catches for 82 yards, 13.7 yards per carry, a touchdown. He had 3 rushes for 25 yards. And then Xavion Capers is back with 6 catches for 54 yards and 9 yards per catch. That's it for returning production. Shedrick Jackson, Javarius Johnson, Malcolm Johnson Jr., and Xavion Capers. Outside of that, J.J. Evans did not appear this year in a football game, according to Auburn Football's latest updated stats on their website. He did not play in a single game this year. And then Tavarius Dawson just played in one game, which was the bowl game. So right now, when you're breaking down what Auburn has coming back in the receiver room, I like the talent that is returning. And I like a lot of the recruits that they brought in at wide receiver. They brought in 3 recruits out of this year's recruiting class. Amari Kelly out of Huntsville. You brought in Camden Brown and Jay Fair. And I think all of those guys are receivers that this coaching staff views as a part of the plan in the future to fit their scheme and what they want to do on the offensive side of the football. Whereas everybody in the receiver room right now, all of these guys were Gus Malzahn recruits. None of these guys were recruited by Brian Harsin or anybody on this offensive coaching staff. Not to say that they don't fit or they can't fit the mold, but I think this coaching staff is trying to remake the receiver room in the image that Brian Harsin wants it to look like. And that would be why you saw so many receivers come through the door outside of just the fact that you needed it. So you break down the fact, I like the talent that is returning on this roster. I think Tavarius Dawson has some upside, especially as a deep threat receiver, as well as Malcolm Johnson Jr. I like Javarius Johnson a lot in the slot. We didn't see a whole lot of Xavion Capers. I don't know what's going on there, why we haven't seen him get on the field a whole lot. He may be one of those players that's left out. Does he finish his career at Auburn? It's fair to ask those questions in the transfer portal day. And then Shedrick Jackson coming back. That's at least a steady hand for you. I thought we saw some improvement from Shedrick Jackson as the season went on. Shedrick Jackson may not be a top-tier receiver in the SEC. He may be a number 3 on most teams in the SEC, but it's still important now when you look at all of the guys leaving, the fact that you're losing 2 of your top 3 pass catchers, it's important that you're bringing back at least one of those guys in the room, because if Shedrick Jackson did not return, Auburn would have needed to go and get 2 receivers in this transfer portal, and Auburn still may need to go and get 2 players in this transfer portal, but I can say with surety, considering this tight end room is extremely deep in terms of pass catchers, Auburn needs at least one receiver in the transfer portal. You've got 3 guys coming in, and Jay Fair, Camden Brown, and Amari Kelly. You've got six guys coming back at the moment. So you've got nine there in the room on scholarship. None of them are studs in the SEC. None of them are number ones. A lot of these guys probably aren't even number twos at this point. Could they develop into that over the offseason? Sure. I think there are a couple players that could do that. But the reality is Auburn needs to go out and at least get one player in the transfer portal at wide receiver. And there's been a couple of names out there recently to enter. Mario Williams for Oklahoma announced on Tuesday that he is planning on entering the transfer portal. He was one of the highest recruits ever in Oklahoma history. He was the number one, 21 player nationally, number 21 player nationally, and the number one wide receiver, one of the top wide receivers looking at the different recruiting services in last year's class. And he caught some, he had like over 500 yards this year for Oklahoma, or over 400 yards for Oklahoma. So he was just as productive already as a freshman in a really deep receiver room at Oklahoma as any of these Auburn receivers were this year. Not saying that Auburn will actually be able to land him, because once again, we talked about the transfer portal and whether or not Auburn is a destination for some of those teams that are perennial playoff contenders. And I think Auburn could go out and get whoever they want in the transfer portal. You just know that Mario Williams is going to have teams like Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson courting him. And that's going to, Auburn may have a fighter's chance, but it could be also extremely difficult to out-recruit some of those teams when he's looking to stay on that same tier in college football. So there are some other names, obviously, other than a Mario Williams out there in the transfer portal that Auburn's going to be able to go out and get. I just think it's a lot more important now that Kobe Hudson's gone. You already knew that Auburn needed to go out and get one. You wanted that when Kobe Hudson was still on the roster. But now that Kobe Hudson is not there, you need one. It went from want to need. That's where Auburn's at wide receiver right now. So, and that's just in addition to the need that you have at quarterback. That's in addition to the needs that you have on the offensive line. You need two or three offensive linemen right now, and you're still waiting to see if Nick Broms is going to come back next year. I think that changes a little bit in terms of the volume that you need on the offensive line, but offensive line is definitely a needs, not a need. There are multiple players that you have to go out and get there. We all knew this. I wouldn't panic. I don't think that this is anything to be concerned about long-term. Obviously, it's a big blow. We had Christian Clemente on yesterday, and he said there's no other way to spin it. This is a big loss. It is a big loss to lose Kobe Hudson. I was watching the Iron Bowl earlier in the studio. It was fun for about 3.5 quarters. But you think back to that Kobe Hudson touchdown that he had in the Iron Bowl. You think back to the touchdown that he had against Mississippi State, the one-handed catch that was erased from all of our memories because of Auburn blowing a 28-3 lead. Kobe Hudson had some spectacular plays this year in crucial moments. To lose him, he was Auburn's leading receiver. I think there was potential there for Auburn to turn him into a number one receiver here on the Plains. This is a big loss. You can't spin it any other way. But the reality is, this isn't four seasons ago in college football. The year is not 2017. The year is not 2016 when you couldn't replenish your roster over the span of an offseason. And I'm not talking about high school seniors. I'm talking about transfers. Back when Auburn went 7-6 in 2015, what you saw on that roster was what you had, plus whoever was coming in as high school seniors going into 2016. You couldn't just change your roster overnight with one player. That's why I don't think folks should panic right now. This coaching staff showed that they can recruit with this year's recruiting class. Nobody expected them to do this. So don't change the bar. Don't change the target. A lot of people were panicking about Auburn's recruiting back in August. And look at where it finished. Finished a lot higher than anybody expected it to. They capitalized off of the momentum that they gathered in playing a really tight Iron Bowl in front of Jordan-Hare Stadium. And of course, they still have a lot of work to do in the 2023 class where they just have one commitment. It's still early in that class, of course. Auburn's got a lot of work to do there. And unfortunately, this next year is not a season where you get to get guys on campus with the Alabama and Georgia games. So you lose those two giant recruiting ploys. You're going to have to build momentum on games like Penn State and LSU and Texas A&M. And winning football games. Winning games this next year will be even more important in terms of being able to recruit high school seniors to get them to buy into what Brian Hartson's trying to build. Auburn's going to have to do better this next year in terms of wins and losses in order to be able to recruit better than what they did this season, which wasn't bad. It was good. Auburn got top 15 nationally, finished 13th. Gus Malzahn was recruiting about that same spot, plus or minus a few spots on average during his time at Auburn. He's got him up to sixth in the SEC. He's not that far from fourth. The reality is there was a giant chasm between 1, 2, and 3 in the SEC. And then there was a chasm, and then it was 4, 5, and 6. And then there was a little bit of a gap between 4, 5, and 6, and then 7, 8, and 9 behind them. And Auburn was able to intercept and pick off several LSU potential commitments. Guys that were in their own backyard, guys that were committed to them for a long time, they were able to flip them. So I think this coaching staff has shown the evidence, especially when you look at the JUCO recruits that they have coming in too. You had 3 of the top JUCO players at their respective positions, including the number 1 JUCO player in the country. These guys are obviously good at selling their brand of football and their culture and their philosophy to these recruits. They recruited just fine. So I don't think it's time to panic just because you've seen some exits here at the end of a season that had a rough finish. And guys are just looking for other things. Maybe this program's not their cup of tea right now. Maybe they just did not fit what Auburn was trying to do. We'll never know, and there's no reason to go any further in speculating it because everybody's entitled to make their own decision. It's a free country, as I said yesterday. It's America. So I would not be concerned about the direction that the offense is going right now in terms of personnel because they've got a lot of time. Now is not the time to panic. The time to panic would be if we rolled into August and, or really if we rolled into the spring game and we didn't see any new faces. But the transfer portal is just now getting going, and that recruiting process is just now getting started. So let's see what this coaching staff can do from a recruiting standpoint because it may change overnight. And you may see a flood of players enter into the program. This offense may look completely different when the spring game rolls around. So that's the Kobe Hudson situation. That's what we know. That's where we're going from here with the receiver room. You've got 9 guys coming back into the receiver room right now. Those players are Shedrick Jackson, Tavarius Dawson, Javarius Johnson, Malcolm Johnson Jr., Xavion Capers, J.J. Evans, and then the 3 high school seniors, Jay Fair, Amari Kelly, and Camden Brown. Those are your 9 players that are coming back into this receiver room. And you may see some guys decide to transfer out of this room over the next couple weeks or after the spring game because some of these guys are going to be buried and maybe they want more playing time. That's going to happen. And that makes it even more important for Auburn to be successful in the transfer portal. I don't disagree with a single person out there that says Auburn needs to be successful in the transfer portal this offseason in order to elevate this offense to a point that helps them win more than 6 games. Because I said this yesterday. Heck, I even said it on Monday. If this offense is what right now, if this is what you've got right now, and you don't do anything to add to it in the transfer portal this year, if this is the offense that you take into game 1 next year, I'm not confident, without a shadow of a doubt in my mind, that Auburn's going bowling. The offense could be that bad. Not time to panic, but definitely there are needs to be filled for Auburn this offseason. And I think that's how you should look at the Kobe Hudson situation. The circumstances have not changed for Auburn football. This is the exact same situation that you were walking into a couple of weeks ago. So I don't think that the circumstances have changed just because of one more departure. The only thing that I would be looking at, and the question that I had that was fair to ask, and I still don't think that this is a problem, but you know what fallout do you see from certain players leaving the program? And I don't think that this one's a particular issue just from the vibe that I get around this and talking to Christian Clemente yesterday saying that's not something to worry about. So I like where Auburn's at right now. They obviously have a lot of work to do, but I wouldn't panic. Let's head to a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk Auburn basketball thrashing South Carolina in Columbia 81-66. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner with you on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Coming up at 2:30, we've got Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer joining us to talk about Auburn's receiver room following an addition of Shedrick Jackson, I would say, for next year. He decided to return, but also the exit of Kobe Hudson, as well as Auburn targeting players in the transfer portal. Also, Auburn basketball, a big win over South Carolina in Columbia last night, 81-66. Checked off a lot of boxes for me where I was asking questions about where this team was at going into last night's game. We'll talk about that later on in the show. I want to start a new segment called Hot Take Wednesday. Let's get into it. Hot Take Wednesday. this segment every Wednesday. We're going to come up with a hot take, what we legitimately believe, not just trying to give you a take to give you a take, but something we legitimately believe that some folks would perceive to be bold. My bold take this Wednesday: Alabama is going to win the national championship by 10 or more points on Monday. And don't tell me this isn't bold. Georgia is favored by 3 points, which is ridiculous to me. I don't see anything that happened in the college football playoff semifinals that tells me that the result of the SEC championship game was altered in any way. Here are some of the things that I saw in the college football playoff semifinal that actually made me feel like nothing's changed. Michigan, a vastly less talented passing team, was able to get over the top on Georgia several times. That Georgia secondary, outside cornerbacks, were getting burnt on a regular basis, quarters 1 through 4. And I know Georgia won big, but you got to look at the little things, because Michigan's not as good as Alabama. You got to look at the little things and how that is going to match up with things that Alabama does well. Michigan wide receivers, 4 different ones, averaged more than 15 yards per reception, including 2 players with a 35-yard reception and a 42-yard reception. Even with John Metchie out, I'm still not sure that Georgia's secondary has the speed or the ability to keep Alabama from getting over the top. That's Alabama's specialty, especially Jameson Williams. Ja'Cory Brooks has emerged as a player that has been able to show their ability to hurt opposing secondaries at multiple levels. Just look at the Iron Bowl. He was the one who caught that pass in the end zone. Deep ball, went up and got it in a one-on-one situation. Dragged his feet in the end zone, caught it in the corner. They've got receivers. Look at how these guys recruit. And sure, some of them have struggled with drops this season, but I think they're turning the corner at the right time. Cincinnati's secondary is better than Georgia's. And sure, they limited what Alabama was able to do in the passing game from a yard standpoint, but Bryce Young still came away with 3 touchdown passes. And Bryce Young's one of the best deep ball throwers, if not the best deep ball thrower in college football. I see Alabama being able to get over the top of Georgia on a regular basis, just like they did in the SEC championship game. I'm not saying that Bryce Young's going to throw for 400 yards or get close to that again like he did in the SEC title game. But I still think they're going to be able to get over the top enough to make a difference in this game. I will concede, though, that one of the X factors in this game is that John Metchie is out. But I still think that there's a lot of depth here at wide receiver for Alabama. They've shown it down the stretch over the last 2 or 3 games this season, where you lost a Jameson Williams in the Iron Bowl. Ja'Cory Brooks scores the game-tying touchdown. You lose John Metchie in the SEC championship game. Alabama still scores 41. Bryce Young still throws 3 touchdowns in the semifinal game. I still like this passing game a lot against the Georgia secondary that really hasn't been tested a whole bunch this year by quarterbacks that can throw the football as well as Bryce Young can, and by receivers that can get downfield as well as Alabama's does. The other X factor in the national championship will be the battle in the trenches, and this is why so many people thought that Georgia was going to win the first time, but it didn't play out this way. And I have no reason to believe that it's going to be any different going into the national championship, because neither of these teams, these were kind of anomaly performances in the SEC championship game, right? Alabama's offensive line was a liability all season, but starting in the SEC championship, it has won the last 2 battles against Georgia and Cincinnati's defensive lines, which are pretty good, and Georgia's is really good. It's so hard to predict if that will continue into this game, because once again, these last 2 games have been an anomaly for the Alabama offensive line, but I believe it will, because it's the national championship and they've been doing it in crunch time. What's going to change from the last 2 games to this one that they won't continue to be successful? And they did it in different ways. Ran the football with no remorse against Cincinnati, over 300 rushing yards. Against Georgia, Bryce Young wasn't sacked once. What? Auburn was able to sack that guy 7 or 8 times, and Georgia couldn't get to him 1 time? And Bryce Young's also one of the better quarterbacks in college football, maybe not as a scrambler, but extending the play and making plays outside of the pocket. I think Georgia's going to have a really hard time affecting Bryce Young as a passer in this game. Likewise, Alabama's defensive line wreaked havoc the first time these 2 teams played, and it has all season, so big shocker there. They wreaked havoc against, though, what we thought was going to be a really good Georgia offensive line. Do we know that for sure, though, that offensive line is really good? I mean, they're good. They are a good offensive line, but are they really good? Are they stop Will Anderson good? I think they haven't been tested by a defensive line and a pass rush as good as Alabama's this year. Aside from when they played Alabama and what happened. Stetson Bennett was fleeing for his life, failing to catch footballs off of his helmet. I just don't think they're going to be able to stop Will Anderson again. This guy is on a warpath. On top of that, Alabama has one of the best rush defenses in all of college football, and there's no reason to bet against it. They hold opponents to just 2.5 yards per carry. Even if Georgia does better than 2.5 yards per carry, like they did in the SEC championship game, because they did, they still only average 3.7 yards per carry. That's not good. And that's not enough for this Georgia offense to be successful. They need to establish the run in order to take the pressure off of Stetson Bennett. And the reality is, Stetson Bennett said it himself recently. The headlines are out there. He's not there to be a savior. He's not capable, I don't think, of putting Georgia on his shoulders and winning this game if it comes down to it. And if they get into third and long situations, that's where Will Anderson Jr. and the rest of this pass rush is just going to tee off. This is a terrible matchup for Georgia, and it was proven in the SEC championship game. And I was wrong about the SEC championship game going into it. I wrongfully picked Georgia, and I'm not going to do it again until Georgia beats them for the first time in the last eight tries. And I still may not pick them the next time that they play. Alabama's the underdog, and that is the rat poison that is going to give this team the bulletin board that they need, the bulletin board material that they need, too. I mean, it's hard to pick against Alabama as an underdog. That's exactly what they need. And some people read too much into that, but I don't think I am here. I'm not getting fooled into picking Georgia again. They have to beat Alabama for me to have any confidence in picking them in the future. And once again, I probably still won't do it then if Georgia does beat them here. How can Stetson Bennett be favored to beat Alabama when he hasn't been able to do this at all, and he's been absolutely horrible against this team in three other opportunities that he's had against them? I'm not convinced that he can make the crucial throws necessary to win the national championship, whereas Bryce Young has proven that he can. I'm going 35-24 in the national championship game. 11-point victory for Alabama. It'll be a little bit better of a game, but not by much.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
30 minutes through the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner with you on the show today, ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. We got Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer with us for this segment. Justin, how's it going today?
No, I'm doing all right, man. How are you?
Doing really well. And let's start off on the football front. Of course, drama to start 2022 with Auburn football. Of course, that's the theme for Auburn football most years. But Kobe Hudson, departure. Shedrick Jackson today announcing his decision to return. What's your look at the receiver room currently after the Kobe Hudson move?
Yeah, well, the Kobe Hudson move definitely hurts. He was Auburn's best receiver from beginning to end this year. He wasn't perfect. He had some mistakes, some drops, had a couple fumbles that were big. But, I mean, he was Auburn's best playmaker and out wide. And it's a departure that's going to hurt because he did have a lot of potential. He's only a sophomore, and you felt like big things were kind of coming from him in the future. Obviously, there was some sort of situation where, it got to a point where he was not going to come back to the team. He wasn't welcome back on the team. And that's a blow for Auburn, but could have been a lot worse because Shedrick Jackson announcing he's coming back for a super senior season. It's big for Auburn because, you know, you are not completely resetting a wide receiver. If Jackson were to go, they would have had to replace their top three receivers for a second straight season. And then you do it now when your quarterback situation very unclear at this point. It would have been really, really tough for Auburn to reload their passing game. Now, Shedrick Jackson's return doesn't guarantee they're going to be, you know, miles better next season, but it's definitely going to help. It is definitely going to help Auburn moving forward. And he had a couple of performances this season, I thought, where he was really, really good for the Tigers. So it's a room that's got some young talent, some guys who are going to have to develop and step up and break out. But I also think this is a room that could get, you know, maybe one or two more guys in the transfer portal, try to pick up a guy like a Demetrius Robertson like they did last year, and somebody who might have some experience or looking to make a step up in competition. And Auburn really, really needs it. And there's a ton of wide receivers in the portal right now.
I think it's fair to ask this question, and I'm not trying to be negative here, but I do think it's fair to ask the question considering all the guys that have exited from the offensive side of the football. We've seen a lot come back on defense, but on the offensive side of the ball, we've seen some coaches let go. We've seen some players leave. What's the potential fallout, if any, here with so many guys exiting at the moment on the offensive side of the football?
Yeah, it just makes the job a lot harder for Auburn moving forward. They're not completely hopeless, and it'll be interesting to see how many offensive linemen decide to come back. For the 2022 season of those seniors that have one more year left that they could use. You're going to have to replace the vast majority, a huge chunk of your passing game. And it just statistically year over year, if you have to replace a lot in the passing game, it's harder for your offense to take a step forward. It's not impossible. And now it's different because this is going to be a new offensive coordinator, and Harsin seems more hands-on with the offense, probably going to be calling plays. And it's the portal era where you can reload quickly. I think a great example of that is Michigan State. Michigan State was a team that struggled in a year one, albeit it was 2020 season where there was a lot of weirdness going on under Mel Tucker. They hit the portal hotter than anybody else, heading into year two, and they have a great season, fantastic year, finish it with a New Year's Six Bowl win. Not saying Auburn can do that because I think their competition is tougher in the SEC, but it's just a challenge. It's a huge challenge, and it's one that I think Brian Harsin and his staff are very well aware of, and they're not going to shy away from it. They've got to do a lot of work in terms of development and recruiting here over the next few months.
Talking about the transfer portal, and this is a question that's been asked to us on this show over the last couple of days. Where does Auburn stand as a destination for some of the top guys out there? You talk about Mario Williams for Oklahoma entering the portal, those high-value top targets that seem to only move around between college football playoff teams on a year-in and year-out basis, that group of four or five teams. Where does Auburn stand in relation to trying to land one of those guys this year?
Yeah, it's going to have to be a heck of a sell if they're going to pull it off. If you talk about the guys that left Oklahoma, and Caleb Williams, Mario Williams, that's a team that year-in and year-out is going to be I think next season, if you would say Oklahoma's still probably going to be in the Big 12 next year, that's a team that, if they play really, really well, they're going to have a shot to be a playoff team. You can't see that right now with Auburn. That's just not the position they are in as a program at the moment. So if they were able to pull off a guy like that, I think it would have to be a major steal for the program. Instead, I think you're more likely going to pull up guys who are a group of five or maybe even some FCS guys like in the trenches to want to make a step up. And the thing there is that there's a lot of really good transfers that come from that route. You don't necessarily have to be a five-star kid coming out of high school to be an impact transfer. It would be nice if you could pull those guys off, but I think you're more likely going to get guys that see Auburn as a spot where, okay, this is a chance for me to play in the SEC. It's a chance for me to play, in a scheme that fits me or, in an opportunity where I'm going to get a really good shot at playing time right off the bat because their roster's in transition. Those are going to be the type of guys I think you see make some moves. So it'll be guys I think that are group of five FCS level, and then there will be some power five guys who are just looking, elsewhere because the coaching changes or not. And Auburn still presents itself as a top 15, top 20 program in the country from a program's perspective. They just might not be competing for a championship next season.
Dreshon Miller enters the transfer portal. This is a guy that we thought was going to play a major role this past year. Ends up not playing really at all. What's going on here?
Yeah, it just never really clicked for him. And Auburn had, several guys ahead of him on the depth chart in fall camp, and it never really changed. It's just kind of from beginning to end, I think. He never did enough to justify a move up the depth chart. And for whatever reason, Auburn's secondary wasn't in dire straits this season without him. And they had some good players and some good performers, obviously, with Roger McCreary and others. But, yeah, for whatever reason, it just never really clicked with Miller in this scheme. And, he's got one more year of eligibility remaining. I did not expect him to play for Auburn next year. So the fact that he is going to, you know, try to use it somewhere else, you know, shouldn't have been a surprise at all to anyone.
With all of the players returning on the defensive side of the football over the last week, what's the upside for this defense in 2022?
I think it could be a really, really good defense. I think Auburn, you know, top 40 defense pretty much across the board, top 30 in some respects this past season. And, you know, it's going to be tough replacing a Zakoby McClain, and it's going to be tougher replacing a Roger McCreary because those are just two elite talents and that have done a ton for Auburn over the last few seasons. But, I mean, Auburn's defensive line, if you take, you know, the guys that are linemen and edge rushers and you add them all together, your pass rushers, you know, for the most part, not linebackers, not defensive backs coming on blitzes, these guys had more sacks this season as a group than Auburn has had from any of their groups of pass rushers in more than a decade. Like, this was a really productive unit, and they're bringing pretty much everybody back. Got to replace Tony Ferry, got to replace T.D. Moultrie, but you hit the portal hard and got Jason Jones. You know, recruiting down the stretch was strong. And getting a couple guys there. And it's just, you expect a lot of guys to take a step forward also. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what Auburn does moving forward at the defensive line position with Nick Eason reportedly on his way to Clemson, going back home to his alma mater. But I would expect Auburn to get, you know, probably somebody with some NFL experience, somebody who can do some of the things that Eason brought to the table. He did a really good job with that group, and Bert Watts did as well at outside linebacker. So I think, if you look at the Auburn's front, you know, the front three or four that they play pretty much every down, it's a really good unit. It's going to return a lot of experience, a lot of production. And the best way to help out a unit that is, you know, reloading at linebacker in the secondary is have a group that can stop the run and rush the passer at a high level. Auburn did that this season, and I think they could continue to push forward. So, I mean, they could be ahead of the game a little bit on defense in this rebuilding effort, or this reloading effort, I should say, because you can win up front.
I say this with a smirk, but what about Tracy Rocker?
Be interested to see what Tracy Rocker has. You know, if he'd be interested. A man who has not been afraid to hop jobs around. But, yeah, I think you're – you know, knowing Harsin's M.O. and seeing what he did with the hire of Austin Davis – you know, I think they see value in bringing guys in from the NFL and bringing guys in that can give you kind of some of that high-level technique coaching. And, I mean, I don't think it's a surprise that as great of a defensive line coach as Rodney Garner was at Auburn, Auburn's defensive line took a step forward this season under the tutelage of Nick Eason. So I think there's a lot of value in getting a guy who has, you know, probably spent time, you know, at the next level coaching up you know, the best of the best in the world at their positions.
Speaking with Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer, let's talk some Auburn basketball now. Tigers passed a big test yesterday in Columbia where we could have seen this team play and win ugly. I think 99% of people on the planet would have predicted Auburn to win, but it was how they were going to win was the real question. And Auburn looked pretty good for the entire contest aside from letting them into it at late, but I thought Auburn passed a big test yesterday.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think this was a really good showcase of the depth of the team. Jabari Smith has one of probably his worst performance of the season. And, you know, I know he comes on strong late to help Auburn close it out, which is, you know, that's what you have when you have an elite talent like Jabari. But, yeah, the depth is huge. You don't have Alan Flanagan, and you still win a game where you have to rebound and play defense really, really physically because that's the way South Carolina plays, especially at home. Wendell Green was phenomenal, obviously, coming off the bench, 20-point game for him, 5-5 off the bench. I mean, he was a great player, and he is, you know, doesn't have to be a starting, you know, point guard for Auburn. I think Auburn likes to get out there with that combination of Zepp Jasper and Katie Johnson, set the tone defensively early. Not to say that Green's defense isn't very good. It is very good, but you start the game with your two big defensive stoppers, and you end the game with your best offensive weapon at guard. And I think that's just kind of the balance and the depth. I mean, everybody kind of got involved and contributed. You know, Jalen Williams had a great game. Chris Moore had a great game off the bench. You got contributions from pretty much anybody. And even some dudes who were quiet in the stat sheet, you know, held their own. And so this is a team that is deeper than pretty much any team in the SEC. And so even if you don't have your superstar freshman playing at a high level, you could still do things like win by 15 on the road against the South Carolina team that's, you know, not going to be expected to be one of the best teams in the SEC this year. But the way they play and the way Frank Martin coaches, like, they're going to trip some people up this year. So Auburn, very, very fortunate that they aren't one of those teams. And they did that because they played really, really well, you know, for the vast majority of that game yesterday.
Is Auburn the best team in the SEC in your mind right now?
I think so. I think it'll be very interesting to see, you know, what happens with Alabama. And, of course, that big showdown next week is going to be a big litmus test. But, yeah, I mean, with Kentucky going down to LSU last night, Auburn's positioned itself pretty well early on. And I think, you know, other teams, there might be teams in the SEC that are better on offense. There might be teams that would be better on defense. There might be teams that have a little bit more star power across the board. But the depth that Auburn has and the balance that they have, I don't think there's a team in the SEC that can say, we have an elite defense and one of the best offenses in the country, or vice versa. I don't think anybody has the balance that Auburn has right now, and that depth's going to go a really, really long way. Because while other teams are struggling or, you know, not getting the results they want when their guys go out, you know, Auburn has missed, you know, veteran wings each of these last two games and won by 15 in both of them. I think it just shows how talented this team is and how deep they are.
Barring complete and utter disaster, you see those lists going into the last month of the season that ESPN reporters or just various different outlets will put out that say these are the X amount of teams that can win a national championship. Do we think that we will see Auburn on one of those lists in a month or two?
I think so. I think you're already seeing some of the national folks kind of getting some buzz because, you know, like I said, there's only a select few teams in college basketball right now. I think Baylor's one of them. I think Arizona's another one. I think Gonzaga, when they play well, is at that point, and we'll see what Duke is. I mean, you got to be really good on offense and really good on defense. And, you know, even though Auburn doesn't have a ton of, hey, these seniors or, hey, these guys have been with our program for years and years and years, and a lot of their key players are new players, they've gelled so well, and they've got that balance. They've got that consistency. And you know, Auburn's a tough team to kind of match up against because it's like there's not a clear-cut weakness on this team. There are things they can get better at. But when you have a superstar player, one of the best shot blockers in the country, a really, really good group of guard, and then when you're dipping into your ninth and tenth man off the bench, and those guys would start at plenty of Power 5 schools across the country, I mean, that's the sign of a team that's going to be really, really dangerous down the stretch.
Justin, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Tell everybody what's coming up on AuburnObserver.com and how they can subscribe.
Yeah, AuburnObserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year gets you access to everything we've got going on. It's a newsletter. Comes in your inbox most every mornings around 6 a.m., either a story or a podcast. So we've had, you know, kind of breakdowns of the Auburn basketball game, the Kobe Hudson move. We're doing a running tracker of Auburn's roster that you can view at any time if you're a subscriber. I'll have a podcast tomorrow morning discussing a lot of the big news involving Auburn football and Auburn basketball right now. Mailbag on Friday, and we'll be covering the Auburn-Florida game this weekend. So a lot going on at the Observer. Sign up there, $6 a month or $60 a year, like I said. And once you do that, everything we do gets sent straight to your email inbox.
Justin, we appreciate it, my man. I hope you have a good rest of your afternoon and evening.
Yeah, you too, man. Thank you.
Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer there with us on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. He's going to be with us on Wednesdays moving forward for a segment every Wednesday to talk to us about the latest going on in Auburn sports. He is one of the best in the business. Go and find him, AuburnObserver.com. Wrapping up hour number one of the Wednesday edition of On the Line, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Big thank you to Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer for joining us in the previous segment. If you missed that great conversation, you missed some really nice tidbits. An exceptional analysis from Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer. Go and find it on the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. If you've got any one of those platforms, go and find our podcast. Just search On the Line. Subscribe, leave a review, rate us. 5 stars, please. I'm sure you will do that for us. Thank you for being such great listeners of On the Line. Let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight. Hey everybody, it's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. A new season of Amazing Race begins with a two-hour episode at 7 p.m. on CBS. Movie selection for tonight, Clint Eastwood stars in Gran Torino at 7 p.m. on AMC. In live sports, we've got a full schedule of college basketball starting the action at 5:30 on FS1. DePaul is at St. John's. Moving to the 6 p.m. time slot, number 15, Alabama has a road test against Florida on ESPN2. And number 18, Tennessee hosts Ole Miss on SEC Network. Syracuse is at Miami at 7 on ACC Network. Moving to the 8 p.m. time slot, top 25 battle between number 25 Texas Tech and number 11 Iowa State on ESPNU. North Carolina and Notre Dame wrap up the action on ESPN2. In the NBA, we have two games on ESPN. Starting at 6:30, the Golden State Warriors are at the Dallas Mavericks, and at 9, the Utah Jazz are at the Denver Nuggets. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight. Back live on the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Let's take a look at what happened in college basketball last night as we wrap up hour number one on the show. Of course, number nine, Auburn, took down South Carolina 81-66, and we'll talk about this game in more detail in hour number two in the first segment, actually coming up at 3 p.m. Auburn handled their business on the road and checked off a lot of boxes for me where I was wondering where this team was at in terms of playing away from Auburn Arena. We know Auburn is good as anybody in the country and can beat anybody in the country when they're playing on their home floor, but they've had some shakier performances on the road away from their own baskets. They went to Columbia last night. They shot 52.7% from the floor, 46.2% from three. Auburn answered a lot of questions last night. I still think there are some things that you can look at in last night's game and say, all right, Auburn can do that better, but we still have 3 months left in the season. Everybody's got that. Auburn is asserting itself right now, I think, as one of the top 10 teams in the country, which right now they're ranked number 9, and I think they're asserting themselves as a team down the line that could win a national championship if they keep getting better. Some other results in the Southeastern Conference. This is the one that is most shocking about yesterday. Vanderbilt upsets Arkansas, and now the Razorbacks have lost 3 of their last 4 games. Scottie Pippen Jr. drops 22 points on the Razorbacks in Fayetteville, 75-74. A wild result in last night's action. Now, when you put it in the perspective that Arkansas hasn't been playing well recently, sure, you could have said, well, that's possible. But what is so shocking about this is that Arkansas still, with the amount of talent that they imported this past offseason through the transfer portal, they can't seem to gel. And they just lost to a team that they, quite frankly, should have beat. Some other games that happened in the SEC, number 21 LSU took down number 16 Kentucky, overcame a 9-point deficit in the second half to win 65-60 against the Wildcats. Now I'm beginning to wonder about Kentucky a little bit because they haven't really beaten anybody that's top 25 caliber yet this season. So where is this team truly in relation to where they're at currently ranked, which is number 16? Is this a top 25 team? I think that's a fair question to ask, and we'll examine that throughout the week. Other result in the SEC, Texas A&M quietly 12-2 overall. 1-0 in the SEC after they beat Georgia 81-79 in Athens. That's it for hour number one of the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We'll start off hour number two with making headlines and breaking down Auburn basketball's victory last night in Columbia.
The Line, live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7 or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390. Or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open during the commercial breaks. The lone soldier here in the studio. So that'll give me time to take your calls during the breaks. If you want to call in, give us a call during our commercial breaks, and that's exactly what Terry did. Terry, how's it going today?
Great. Noah, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing real well.
Holding things down in there, huh?
That's right. Start of the new year. Still waiting for folks to come back.
got a two-part question for you here.
Go for it.
First of all, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think the chances of Auburn signing a quarterback before the season starts? And on the same question, part two, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think is the need at quarterback? Because I think if T.J. Finley is the quarterback in July, Auburn's looking at a 5-7 season.
I'm going to go now, 10 and 10.
I'm sorry?
I'm going to go 10 and 10. You said a scale of 1 to 10, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 10 and 10, meaning they need it bad,
okay.
More than bad, 100%. And I think they will do it. This coaching staff, I think, is attempting to court several guys out there right now. I know Zach Calzada's name has come up, and that's not necessarily like the name that I want to hear, but I think he's better than what's on the roster.
No, I'm with you there, Noah. That's a name. I don't want him anywhere near Auburn. I mean, I agree with you. I think he's upgrade from definitely what's there, or what we've seen. We haven't seen D. Davis yet, so we don't know. But Zach Calzada basically played his with the quarterback at Steven Garcia at South, played his game against Alabama. Like he did. He had that Alabama game. He's a one-hit wonder. You know, and that's what worries me, that he's really average. Because if you look at his high school numbers and Finley's high school numbers, they're really not that much difference.
And I see some upside with Calzada just because this was his first year playing at the collegiate level. And I think we saw him get better from his first game to his last game. But he was inconsistent. He was a 56% completion percentage type of quarterback. He's going to have to be a lot better than that for Auburn to be, you know, to win more than six games, you know. And I'm with you, what you said earlier. If this offense doesn't import some talent before next season, I see a very difficult path to a bowl game next year.
Well, and I can agree with everybody. I'm glad to have the defensive guys there. Certainly they can contribute. Certainly that adds to the depth. But if you're going to – with great defense and you're accepting another 6-7 season, because that's what it's going to be. The defense is going to be out there for the majority of the game, and they're just going to run out of gas. The game is played offensively now. That's just the way it is. I don't care whether you like it or not, folks.
Yeah, and you need quarterbacks that can make the throws, that can make those crucial throws that can win you tight ball games. And the reality is you look at a couple of Auburn's losses at the end of the year. You look at Alabama and you look at Houston. Bryce Young made the crucial throws down the stretch. T.J. Finley did not. You look in the Houston game, Clayton Tune made the throws. T.J. Finley did not. And I think in the national championship game, on a much, much greater scale with much, much better players around those guys, the truth is still the same. Bryce Young's going to make the throws and Stetson Bennett isn't. So I'm with you, Terry.
Well, I can't understand why people think Brian Harsin just wants a statue quarterback there. You got today's game with athletic and big and strong and athletic as the defensive people are, guys, you got to have a guy that can extend the play. Not necessarily scramble, but extend the play. Days of a pocket passer is gone. I know somebody's going to call up and bring up Tom Brady, but you don't need to call up and compare any quarterback of Auburn to the GOAT, okay? We need to get that out of the way now. And besides the fact, Tom Brady is one of the most amazing releases it's ever been.
Yeah.
That's why he doesn't get sacked.
And you also, you look, and he's one of the most cerebral players in the game, too. He understands the game better than everybody else, which gives him that edge. And I think you look across college football, most guys playing the quarterback position aren't statues anymore. And, of course, there's still a handful of them. But I agree. I think it's definitely a plus to be able to extend a play. And I don't know if Harsin's necessarily looking for statues. Like, Zach Calzada is not a running quarterback. That is not a strength for him. But he can extend plays, and he plays gritty like that. If people remember watching in the Auburn Texas A&M game, that's how one of his shoulders went numb. You know, I mean, the guy.
Well, no, I'm in 100% agreement with you on the game Monday night. I think Alabama's going to beat them by 2 touchdowns. For some reason, Kirby Smart believes in Stetson Bennett, and I do not know why. I mean, I don't know what JT Daniels holds, but I know he won't win it with Stetson Bennett.
And I wonder if JT Daniels is hurt or whatever. Only Kirby Smart knows why he's got, and obviously the coaches and the players on the team, but only the Georgia football team knows why Stetson Bennett is playing over JT Daniels right now. And some people may question whether or not Kirby's making the right decision with that because of the Justin Fields situation a couple of years ago. But the reality is, I don't think JT Daniels is that much better than Stetson Bennett at this moment, and that may be because of the dysfunction that has been the quarterback position for Georgia for the last several years, because you've had guys get hurt, and then, you know, JT Daniels is definitely that player who has been hurt, has played some, has not been able to be out there full time, so that's going to hurt his rhythm. I, for whatever reason, Stetson Bennett's the guy that you go with, but Stetson Bennett, you know, was in the headlines today saying that he's not there to be the savior for Georgia, and that he understands his role. It's going to be everybody else stepping up for him, and I don't think that's going to be enough.
Well, or could it be that Kirby Smart's head coaching ego has got out of control, and he's just wanting to prove that he can win with Stetson Bennett, which he can't. and he's afraid JT Daniels is going to make a throw or a play that he sets him in and never could, and he would look like a fool for the rest of the year for not playing him.
I don't, you know, get into those types of conspiracies, but, you know, egos are at play in college sports. I don't necessarily buy that, but because I think these coaches want to win and they're going to do whatever they can to win. But sometimes I will say this, and I know you've made this point a lot of time, coaches are not infallible. You know, they are not God. They will make mistakes, and sometimes coaches do. Terry, we appreciate the call, my man.
Take care, guys.
That was Terry on the line with us here on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. I'm the Lone Soldier, as I said, inside the studio today. If you want to call in, the number is 334-321-1390. Wait till the commercial breaks. That'll be coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Let's start off hour number two now with Making Headlines. Making Headlines. All right, we're going to bounce around some of the different things going on in the sports world. Auburn brings back Shedrick Jackson with his announcement that he is going to be returning for his super senior season, a sixth year due to the coronavirus. Dreshawn Miller announced that he will be on his way inside the transfer portal, so we're going to look at what both of these things do for the Auburn football program moving forward. Shedrick Jackson, this became a need when Kobe Hudson was kicked off the football team earlier this week. At least that's what he said on his Instagram page. Demetrius Robertson and Kobe Hudson, two of your top three pass catchers out of the wide receiver room, excluding tight ends, those guys are gone. Shedrick Jackson almost made it the trifecta, three for three, if he did not return. Shed Jackson returning, he may be a number three receiver on pretty much every team in the SEC. He may not even be a top three receiver on some teams in the SEC. But the reality is he had 40 catches for 527 yards. Those totals were good for second amongst the wide receivers. He had 13.2 yards per catch and one touchdown. So albeit in the red zone, he wasn't overly effective, just had the one touchdown. I do think in the intermediate pass game at times this year, and we saw Shedrick Jackson get better, this is going to be a support player for a receiver room that desperately needs the depth right now, desperately needs the personnel. So this is only a good thing that Shedrick Jackson is coming back. But the reality of the situation is Kobe Hudson's departure took what was a want. And you wanted it bad because it was going to help your receiver room, but I don't think it was a greater need or a greater want than offensive linemen or quarterbacks in the transfer portal. But losing Kobe Hudson took what was a want for Auburn this year in the transfer portal and made it a need. And they may need two players out of the transfer portal to remake this receiver room. It depends on how they feel about the guys that are coming back around Shedrick Jackson, behind him on the depth chart. Tavares Dawson played in just one game this year, didn't record a stat. He played in the Houston game. J.J. Evans did not play at all this year, according to Auburn's website and their statistics for participation. J.J. Evans didn't play a down. So you've got two guys right there returning that have little to none game experience. And then the three players that are coming back outside of that, Javarius Johnson, who had 19 catches this year for 274 yards and no touchdowns. He had one rushing touchdown, and that was in the Mississippi State game. And Malcolm Johnson Jr., who had six catches for 82 yards and a touchdown. And Xavion Capers, who had six catches for 54 yards. The reality is one of those guys will probably end up being one of your top three receivers next year. I would say that it's probably Javarius Johnson out of the slot. You've got Shedrick Jackson, who's probably going to play the X. And then there's going to be the transfer portal for whatever you can find for one or two guys. The fact that Xavion Capers can't get on the field yet, I don't know what that is. I don't know why that's happening. Only the coaches and the players know. Hopefully he can find it. Because, I mean, he was a highly valued recruit in the Gus Malzahn recruiting class, and he stuck with the team. So I hope that he can eventually find himself onto the field. But for whatever reason, he was one of the last guys out there on that depth chart for Auburn when it got into the waning moments of ball games. I expect to see a Javarius Johnson or a Malcolm Johnson Jr. receive more playing time alongside Shedrick Jackson, whatever they can find in the transfer portal. So for Auburn right now at wide receiver, what was a want at wide receiver, because you felt like it could help elevate your room and make it even better and possibly turn into a top-half unit in the SEC, that has now turned into the fact that you need it in order to keep it together, in order for your quarterback to have somebody to throw to, or else we're going to be looking at the disaster of wide receiver that we were looking at through the first five games of this season. But it did get better. I think Eric Keesaw was a really good move for Auburn because you saw these receivers stop dropping passes, you saw them start getting open. You started seeing them make some of those crucial catches in important football games, like in the Alabama game. I was watching the Iron Bowl earlier. Demetrius Robertson on third down and long catches a pass down the sideline, albeit if you watch the replay, it came off of his face mask and fortuitously, by the grace of God, into his hands. And then that was going off of his face mask. I don't know how that went through his hands on the replay. But regardless, they made those catches in the moments. And if Demetrius Robertson doesn't make that catch, the next two plays, or the next play rather, Kobe Hudson doesn't score the touchdown in the Iron Bowl, and then maybe the game doesn't play out the way it did for Auburn to be able to stick around for so long. So the reality is Auburn had some guys as the season went along. They improved marginally, but they improved enough to make you believe that a full offseason with Eric Kiesel, these guys are going to be even better with what's left on the roster. You bring in three high school seniors in Camden Brown and Jay Fair and Amari Kelly, but how ready are those guys going to be to play right away? And I think you're going to see some playing time from those players because they fit what Brian Harsin wants to do from a scheme perspective, maybe a little bit more than some of these receivers that Gus Malzahn recruited. So these guys may end up getting some favor from this coaching staff. I don't think they have a problem with playing young players if they show the ability to work hard and they show that they're ready to play in games. I don't think that they've got a problem playing these younger players. But the reality is they still need to go out. It is a need to go in and get at least one receiver that can help provide some depth and some quality play. You need to go out and get a number one receiver in this room. And there are some out there in the transfer portal, and there are several from Oklahoma, and you know those guys can play some football and catch the football at Oklahoma. As far as Dreshon Miller, I don't think that this is bad for the Auburn secondary at all. Expected, considering he did not play at all this year. We expected him to be a major player in the secondary, considering what he did at West Virginia. I thought this was a guy that we'd be talking about going to the NFL draft. I was wrong. I don't know what prevented him from getting out on the field, but he was one of the top cornerbacks for West Virginia 2 years ago in what was one of the statistically the best secondaries in college football. So for whatever reason, it didn't work out for Dreshon Miller at Auburn. I hope it worked out for him somewhere else. But the reality is Auburn added Marquise Gilbert, the number one safety out of the JUCO ranks, and then Keontae Scott, the number one cornerback out of the JUCO ranks. And they still bring back several guys like Jalen Simpson and Nehemiah Pritchett. This was not a year where Dreshon Miller was going to climb the depth chart. Roe Torrence also inside that room. Dreshon Miller was not going to get out of that fifth spot in the depth chart next year. So I understand his move. Moving to our next headline, Auburn handles its business in Columbia, South Carolina as they take down the Gamecocks 81-65 to advance to 13-1 overall and 2-0 in conference play. Some takeaways from last night's performances for Auburn. I asked this question on yesterday's show, would Auburn play the game the right way? For me, it was not about if Auburn would win, it was how Auburn won the game. It was about margin of victory. It was about how Auburn played the game. I go back to Will Wade's press conference several weeks ago when he was talking about Auburn as one of their upcoming opponents. He said, if they play like this against Auburn, people are going to be hanging from the rafters. Guess what? That happened. For Auburn, they have had some shaky performances away from home. They have. Look at the St. Louis game, the USF game, and Battle for Atlantis. They had two shaky offensive performances. I felt like from an efficiency standpoint, in the first 2 days of that event, they had a great game against Syracuse to wrap it up. But the reality is, Auburn hasn't played consistently well away from home. Last night, I thought they played for about three quarters of the game. They played really well away from home. And when you break it down statistically, Auburn shot 53% from the field as a team and 42% from three as a team. When you get those types of numbers on the road, you did something right. Now, let's talk about the things that maybe they didn't do well. Let's just get that out of the way first. For the most part, Auburn played the game the right way. Three quarters of the time, I thought Auburn played the game the right way against South Carolina. There was a stretch in the second half where they allowed South Carolina to get back into the game, and Bruce Pearl mentioned that in his post-game press conference. He mentioned that Auburn got a little sloppy, started turning the basketball over, and it let South Carolina back in. What went from a 20-point lead or a 21-point lead went down to an 8-point lead. You can't do that against Tennessee, Alabama, Kentucky. You can't do that against those teams that are that talented. I don't think you could do it against Arkansas, regardless of how they're playing at the moment. You can do it against South Carolina because they are offensively inefficient. You can do that, and it won't kill you, even though they did get within 8 points. You could still win the game. But the reality is this team looks to continue to improve, looks to continue to get into the national championship conversation. The little things separate teams from being able to win a national championship and go all the way in a 68-team bracket versus not doing the little things the right way. Auburn still had 17 turnovers last night. The assist-to-turnover ratio was not good for Auburn. It was one of their worst of the season. They had 13 assists to 17 turnovers. That's not good. Now, I'm not roasting Auburn's play last night. I thought they played really well for three quarters of the game. But the reason why I'm harping on this is because I think this team has a chance to win a national championship. And as I go back to the little things separates you from being able to win in a 68-team bracket versus losing in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. You have to do the little things better than the other teams. There's no doubt Auburn is as talented and as deep as anybody else in the country. There's only a few teams that have more talent than Auburn does. Gonzaga, maybe, when you talk about the future NBA players that they have on their roster. That means you got to do the little things right. You've got to beat those teams in other categories. You've got to outwork them. And Auburn, I think, did a really good job of that last night for about three-fourths of the ballgame. But there was a little bit of a stretch, and maybe even more than that, but there was a little bit of a stretch where you can't do that against a great team. They may beat you. And I think we've seen a tendency from this Auburn team to get lazy and start taking bad shots or have turnovers when they get up by double digits. No, put teams away. Beat them by 30. Beat them by 20. Beat them by 30. Put them away. A 15-point win, though, in Columbia is still excellent because this is a place that Auburn has not played well in recent years, and Bruce Pearl pointed that out before the game in one of his pregame press conferences. Let's talk about the good things Auburn did, though, because it was a great performance for Auburn yesterday. It was. Auburn shot the basketball well against a team that has been stingy on defense. South Carolina was in the top 50 in Ken Pomeroy's adjusted defensive efficiency ratings. Auburn got to the free throw line and made it count as expected. South Carolina fouls a lot. Auburn shot 23 free throws, made 17 of them. That's a big part of why Auburn won this game by 15. They were plus 9 in free throws made in this game. They were plus 5 in field goals made in this game. They were more efficient on the offensive side of the basketball. And as I said earlier, if you shoot 53% on the road and 46% from three, you did something right. The only thing that I would clean up is the turnovers yesterday. Something else that I really liked in this game for Auburn. South Carolina defends the three really well. And they have been able to force opponents into turnovers. They defend the rim really well. They were 17th in the nation in blocks per game. They were in the top category. They were in a top percentage in college basketball in terms of defending the rim. They were holding opponents, and I can't remember what the exact rank was in college basketball, but they were definitely holding opponents below 50% inside the arc, which is a good category as far as opponent two-point percentages. Auburn didn't get frustrated if there was ever a stretch in the game where they weren't making shots. They kept hammering it down low against a team that was just as physical and just as tall as Auburn was. Walker Kessler didn't miss a shot yesterday. Went 5-for-5 from the field, 2-for-2 at the free throw line. Auburn hammered away. You talk about how many three-pointers Auburn shot yesterday. They shot 13. They just shot 13 threes. That means they took a grand total of 42 shots inside the paint, and they made 23 of them. Auburn was excellent in the lane. And then they went to the charity stripe an additional 23 times and made 17 of those. Auburn won this game in the paint yesterday. I mean, there are so many things that Auburn did well in this game. I hope people didn't think I was nitpicking or anything like that. But the reality is, like I said, the little things are the difference. I thought Auburn did the little things well for about three-quarters of the game, four-fifths of the game yesterday. And that is a huge improvement from what we saw on the road at St. Louis. That's a huge improvement from what we saw against USF in Game 3. We're seeing this team get better by the day. That is incredibly dangerous for a team that is as talented and as deep as this Auburn basketball team is. People should be getting extremely excited if they are not already. And I understand trying to contain your emotions, but this team really does. This team will be written about in articles in 2 months as a team that can win a national championship. Those articles come out every year. X amount of teams can win a national championship. Here they are. Auburn's going to be in them. They're that good. Barring disaster, of course, and the fact that there's still the coronavirus rumbling around. That's it for making headlines here on the Wednesday edition of the show. When we come back, we'll tell you what's coming up in college basketball tonight, as well as the Radio Alabama Sports Minute. midway through hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner with you in the studio. If you want to call in, 334-321-1390, do it during our commercial breaks. We want to hear from you. I'm the Lone Soldier in the studio today. If you've missed any of the program today, go and find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. Before we get into our next topic, let's get into some of the news that happened yesterday with the Radio Alabama Sports Minute.
I'm Noah Gardner with your Radio Alabama Sports Minute. Ninth-ranked Auburn men's basketball has jumped down to a 2-0 start in conference play after an 81-66 thrashing of South Carolina in Columbia. As a team, Auburn shot 52.7% from the field and 46.2% from three against a South Carolina defense that was ranked inside the top 50 of Ken Pomeroy's adjusted defensive efficiency rankings. Auburn's bench put up 40 points in the win, with Wendell Green Jr. leading the way for the Tigers with 22 points on 7-for-15 shooting, adding 5 assists, 5 rebounds and 2 steals to his stat line. Walker Kessler continued his torrid pace with a double-double performance on 12 points and 10 rebounds. Kessler did not miss a shot, going 5-for-5 from the field and 2-for-2 from the charity stripe. Back-to-back 15-point wins are how the Tigers have started conference play, lifting them to 13-1 overall with a game against Florida on Saturday in Auburn Arena. Other results inside the SEC on Tuesday: number 21 LSU made a 9-point comeback in the second half against number 16 Kentucky to beat the Wildcats 65-60 in Baton Rouge. Texas A&M just squeaked out a victory on the road against Georgia 81-79 to improve to a sneaky 12-2 record. Lastly, Vanderbilt pulled off the shocking upset of the night, going into Fayetteville and knocking off Arkansas 75-74 behind Scottie Pippen Jr.'s 22 points.
I'm Noah Gardner, and that's your Radio Alabama Sports Minute.
Back live on the Line. That was the Radio Alabama Sports Minute, giving you a look into some of the news that happened yesterday and going into today. What's going on in college basketball tonight? There's still a full schedule of games, despite the fact that the NBA has 2 games on ESPN this evening. Alabama is in a road test with Florida this evening. The Gators finished non-conference play a little sloppy, but they are 1.5-point favorites at home over the 15th-ranked Crimson Tide, who also finished non-conference play sloppily as well. They obviously had that loss to Davidson, and then they returned to Coleman Coliseum after that and followed it up with a 5-point win over a shorthanded Tennessee team that had a couple of guys out due to COVID. But Alabama was able to beat a top 15 Tennessee team that now sees Alabama jump inside the top 15. They've got that Florida game on the road tonight. How does this Alabama play against a Gators team that has not seen an SEC opponent yet, whereas Alabama is 1-0? The last time Florida played was December 22nd against Stony Brook, which was an 87-62 win for the Gators. Is that elongated time off because they had a game or two canceled due to the coronavirus, is that elongated time off for Florida going to be troublesome for them? Or are they going to have to knock some rust off, whereas Alabama looked pretty good last week on December 29th at the start of SEC play on Wednesday night? Alabama coming into the game shooting 47%, Florida shooting 43%. These offenses are vastly different, but the defenses are too. Florida's giving up under 60 points per game. Alabama is giving up 73. These two teams, that's a clash of styles tonight, and it should be a pretty good basketball game. Once again, Florida is favored by 1.5 points at home inside Gainesville. Another game going on in the SEC tonight that is going to have some interest for folks around the league. Ole Miss is at number 18, Tennessee. That at 6 p.m. on SEC Network. Tennessee favored by 17 points, which seems like a lot for me for them to cover, especially considering Ole Miss's defense. I think it's pretty good. They may play a slower brand of basketball than most teams do in the college game, and they're not a very good offensive team, but this defense is not bad. They hold folks to 63.4 points per game. Now, Tennessee's defense is very good as well. Just this Tennessee offense has at times proven to be inconsistent. You look at the time that they played Texas Tech, only scored 52 points, and that game went to overtime. You look against Alabama, they scored 68 points against a pedestrian Alabama defense over the last couple weeks. Then again, they were able to score enough to beat Arizona in the high 70s a couple weeks ago. They've just been so inconsistent over the last month on the offensive side of the floor. Is Ole Miss going to be able to exploit that from a defensive standpoint? That'll be something to watch out for. I'm not calling for the upset at Thompson Bowling Arena, but 17 just seems like a lot to me. I don't think that we've seen we haven't seen a lopsided affair like that yet in conference play, aside from like Kentucky-Missouri last week when SEC play started. This league is deep, and I think Ole Miss is part of that. They may be a bottom five, bottom six team in the league, but I still think that the SEC is so deep that you're not going to see a lot of 17-point victories this year in conference play. Moving into the 8 p.m. time slot tonight, a top 25 battle in the Big 12. Iowa State favored by 4 points over number 25 Texas Tech. The 11th-ranked Cyclones playing on their home floor tonight, 12-1. That's at 8 p.m. on ESPNU. And then North Carolina and Notre Dame play at 8 p.m. on ESPN2. Several games canceled or postponed for tonight. Mississippi State, Missouri was postponed. Arizona State, UCLA still working through this virus that right now is affecting the college game, but still some good basketball on this evening inside the Southeastern Conference that's just chugging along.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the line, just about 25 minutes or so left in the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. And we've got Jacob Hillman, Auburn Jungle president and sports director at WEGL 91.1 FM. Jacob, how's it going today, my man?
I'm doing well, Noah. Happy New Year to everyone. It's great to be back on the line.
That's right. Happy New Year to you. Your first time hopping on this year. Hope you've been doing well these past couple of days. Now tell me, what city are you located in right now? Because you were in Columbia last night.
Currently Auburn, Alabama. I did make the trip back last night. I made it a simple day trip to Columbia from Auburn. So it was a good atmosphere out there, and I really thought the Auburn faithful brought it. Big thing is those away games are easier to get into than Auburn Arena right now. So yeah, I was glad to see a lot of Auburn fans there, and they were loud as well. Bruce Pearl, he mentioned it, and really it's something that is being noticed by the team and everyone throughout the Auburn family.
Well, this is well documented. You have a traveler's curse. Is that being fixed? What did you do to fix that?
Well, I think honestly what was fixed it was when I went to Tennessee right before COVID hit and Auburn won. Well, basically what happened was the world completely changed. So that's kind of what fixed it for Auburn. But, yeah, lately I've been traveling and things have gone well. So fingers crossed it stays that way through basketball and baseball season.
So COVID-19 is your fault?
Some would say. Some would say.
I'm just messing around, my man. Yesterday's environment, Bruce Pearl noted 1,000 plus fans in Columbia. I mean, that's a lot. And, of course, that's a big arena in the SEC, but the Auburn faithful showing out last night. The students got to play a big part in that, and there's a big game coming up on Saturday against Florida. But what were your takeaways from yesterday's performance in what has traditionally been a very difficult place for Auburn to play?
Well, one, Wendell Green playing out of his mind, 22 points, and really I think that's something that needs to continue to happen for Auburn to be really successful in SEC play, and whenever we get into March, is Wendell Green being a massive factor off the bench. And who knows, maybe Spurl will put him in the starting lineup at some point again, but Deb Jasper played well. So I don't see that changing at all. I think you keep the lineup like it has been with, obviously, when Alan Flanagan's healthy, put him in the starting lineup. But my other takeaway was the fact that, one, you're missing Flanagan, and two, Jabari Smith didn't play his best game until the last 5 minutes, and Auburn still came away with a big victory, winning by 15 or so points. So I really thought this team is coming together well. 41 bench points is a lot. That is a lot. I think you could almost say that Auburn doesn't have a bench in the sense that all those guys could be starting at other schools, and they're playing like starters. So, you know, you take one guy out and another guy's ready to go in and really make a big difference. So I was really, really impressed by this Auburn team going on the road, because we know how it is in conference play. going on the road is not easy. And we really saw that when South Carolina cut the deficit to 8 points. That's, you know, you really thought, okay, this is it. This is when Auburn needs to show what they're made of, and they certainly did that.
Of course, you have traveled to a lot of different locations this year for Auburn basketball games. So I'm going to ask you this question. Is this team improving away from home? Yesterday was a bit of a litmus test for me in that area because we've seen some shaky performances away from Auburn Arena this year, namely in St. Louis and then in South Florida.
Yeah, I think definitely the performance yesterday, and as well as, you know, it's kind of here and there. They have not a great performance, and then they do much better because you have the Nebraska game in Atlanta, which obviously that's not a road game, but still not in Auburn Arena, not an arena you're used to shooting in. They put up 99 points. And you go to St. Louis, you do what you do there, have to come back from 13 points. And then, obviously, South Carolina, a dominant win. I also think about Battle for Atlantis. You had the game against UConn where I would say that's just an early season game. You played against Sonogo, who dominated against a Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith, who hadn't quite found their rhythm yet. And then, obviously, also in Atlantis, they beat Syracuse by a lot. It's not a great win against Syracuse. They're not the Syracuse they usually are, but it's still a good team. So I would say they've been improving, but there's always going to be that point in the season where there's going to be a two-game stretch, two or three-game stretch where team's not going to play as well, and that's okay. You need to be peaked in March. You gotta make sure you're playing your best basketball come early March into late March.
Speaking with Jacob Hillman, the president of the Auburn Jungle, which is Auburn's student section. Jacob, students are going to be coming back to campus. Classes start on Monday. What type of environment are you expecting against Florida?
Well, first of all, it's paradise on the plane. So, you know, it's going to be cold this weekend. Come inside Auburn Arena in your Hawaiian shirt or beach-themed shirt or whatever.
If you can make it inside without freezing.
Well, yeah. I mean, no, there's ways to do that. There's ways
That's
to
right.
do that. But yeah, it's going to be a great environment, just the students really coming back for the first time. Obviously, I mean, we had over 500 students in the door within 15 minutes against the LSU game. So really, it's not their first return. A lot of students came back for that LSU game. But this Florida game will obviously only be students. There won't be any ticket buyers down in the bleachers. So really, I expect it to be a great environment against the Florida team that, especially if they get a win tonight against Alabama, at Florida, you know, it's going to be hyped up. Even if Florida doesn't get that win, it's still going to be a great environment, and I'm looking forward to welcoming the students back, and I know the team is looking forward to the same thing.
Let's switch gears now to football. Of course, you've seen the latest news with Kobe Hudson, Dreshon Miller announcing that they're both leaving, but Shedrick Jackson returning. Let's talk about the wide receiver room right now. What is your takeaways from this situation and where Auburn's going forward from here?
Yeah, looking at the wide receiver room, you just got to look in the transfer portal. I think that that's the biggest thing. Also, Auburn still has room to add to the class within National Signing Day in February, because obviously we focus so much on the early signing period. There's still a chance to improve once you get to February and some guys that maybe didn't sign in December. That's the big thing for me, is just going out there, grabbing some guys, and really adding bodies, adding people to compete in the receiver room. And also, already in the receiver room, I wouldn't say there's a massive lack of talent. It's just obviously same position as Auburn was in last year. No experience. So that's a big thing that Auburn fans will have to look for, I think, going into the spring. That spring game, that's obviously going to be what everyone's looking for. What receiver stands up, obviously, other than the quarterback position, what receiver stands out and plays really well?
Of course, taking a look at the defense, they saw a lot of players come back. How do you feel about the upside of this defense going into 2022?
It's hard to be disappointed with a defense after some late season performances and what Auburn has returning. Owen Papo, I think, is just a huge returnee. You lose Kobe McClain, but I think Papo can kind of slide into that leadership role that McClain did last year. The big thing for Papo is obviously staying healthy. He was unable to do that last season, but I think that's just something with the offseason of recovery he can do easily. Even the defensive backfield, it's hard to be too sad about McCreary leaving, because there's still talent out there, and you bring in guys as well. Defensive line, I think, even with the news about Coach Eason, it's going to be interesting to see how you plug and play on the defensive line with so many returnees as well as newcomers. So I'm looking forward to what that defensive line looks like in game one versus game six in 2022.
Of course, the reports are out there about Nick Eason potentially going to Clemson. You can't blame the guy. That's his alma mater. Also, it's Clemson with the players that he's going to have around him. I mean, this is an opportunity for him to continue to elevate himself in the collegiate game. And that's not saying that he didn't do a great job here at Auburn or that he's using Auburn in any way. He is going home. My curious question here is, where does Auburn move forward from here at the defensive line coach position? I say this with a smirk. I said this to Justin Ferguson earlier. Tracy Rocker, question mark?
Right, and first of all, about, yeah, Coach Eason, he did a great job at Auburn. I think that the recruiting class he brought in, he did recruit to Auburn. He didn't recruit to himself. He recruited to Auburn. He saw what Jeffrey Emba said earlier today. He's not going anywhere. So, you know, that shows, you know, no hard feelings. Like you said, congrats to him. He gets to go back to his alma mater. That's something that guys dream of. So that's a big deal for him. But, yeah, looking ahead for Auburn, it's really, you got options. You could go that route where you go for the same type of deal, get Coach Rocker to come back to his alma mater. He's been here before as a coach. You know, I really don't know about any other names, but I mean, I think I would love bringing Tracy Rocker back to the Plains.
Jacob, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media and what all you've got going on.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Jacob Hillman AU, and obviously with the students returning and basketball season, SEC play right in the thick of things, follow the Jungle on Twitter and Instagram at AU Jungle.
Jacob, I appreciate it, my man. I hope you have a good rest of your afternoon and a good rest of your last week off before classes get started back.
Thanks for having me on, Noah. Always great to be on.
That was Jacob Hillman, the Auburn Jungle president. That is the president of the Auburn student section, as well as the sports director at WEJL 91.1 FM, former intern here. Friend of the program, longtime friend of mine. Glad to have him on the show today. Got a lot more to still go over here in just a short amount of time. We've got about 13 minutes left in the Wednesday edition of the show. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to talk a little bit more about the national championship game as well as some of the other headlines going on in college sports and at the professional level. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM and ESPN 106.7.
Last segment of the Wednesday edition of the show. Noah Gardner with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Big thank you to Jacob Hillman, the Auburn Jungle president, for joining us in that previous segment, as well as Justin Ferguson earlier today of the Auburn Observer. If you missed any of the show, go and find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. About 9 minutes or so left in the show, and we're going to head to the phone lines now. Our last call of the day, we got Spectre on the line with us. Spectre, how's it going? Haven't heard from you in a couple of days.
Pretty good. Listen, I'm trying to wrap my head around this loss of a defensive coach.
Talking about Nick Eason?
Yes.
So what is what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I'm thinking maybe the cancer that we got on the offensive side of the ball is kind of working its way over to the defense. You see that?
I don't see that with this situation. And now I have been asking the question the last couple days, especially since the Kobe Hudson thing happened. I've been wondering, you know, what could be a potential fallout in the locker room for some of these losses, or, you know, seeing some of the coaches be let go? Like, would there be any type of, you know, ill will built up because of, you know, a really direct approach from the top, right? But I don't think that's the case here. And the reason for that is Nick Eason's a Clemson alum and he's going back home. And on top of that, you know, I think this should be a compliment to Auburn and how good of a job they did in finding Nick Eason out of the NFL originally, because he's going to Clemson. He's going to one of the, you know, not a blue blood, because historically they're not of that caliber, but he's going to one of college football's VIP teams, right? And that's not a knock against Auburn. I just think, you know, it says a lot about what Auburn did on the defensive line this year that Clemson said, hey, we want this guy to come coach our unit.
Yeah, well, I don't want to believe this guy's just strictly homesick. And, usually when a coach leaves a team, he's done extremely well. I mean, we had our so-so defense. We had some games that weren't so great on defense, but especially the South Carolina game. But I'm worried about this coaching situation. It's just something I just can't wrap my head around. I feel like something's coming up. I just don't know. Well, anyway, with that being said, looks like you need to go to the transfer portal and get you another co-host.
That's a good point, Spectre. That is a good point. Yeah, we're hoping to have that situation corrected and everything over the next week or so. We're still looking at some folks to come help me out during the day. But you are right. I do need to hit the transfer portal.
Well, have a nice day.
You too, Spectre. Appreciate it. That was Spectre on the line with us here on the Wednesday edition of the show. We got about 6 minutes left. To Spectre's thoughts on the coaching staff, this is my response to it, and I've said this a little bit over the last couple days or so, but this is what I perceive to be going on. You're still encountering a transition between the previous regime and this current one, and some coaches that you may have thought were going to fit because you may have not have known a whole lot about what you were walking into in the SEC. Maybe those guys didn't end up fitting. You don't really know somebody until you start to work with them. You know, Brian Harsin didn't have former working experience with Cornelius Williams or Mike Bobo or even Nick Eason. And Nick Eason going to Clemson, I do think, is as simple as, if those reports end up being true, Nick Eason going to Clemson, I do think, is as simple as he's going back to his alma mater. And I do think it is a step up for him in terms of his position because he's coaching a defensive line that's loaded with talent at Clemson, and this could help elevate him to whatever his aspirations are if they are beyond being a defensive line coach. Maybe he wants to be a defensive coordinator one day. Maybe he wants to have an opportunity to be a head coach. I don't know what those aspirations are, but he was a hot up-and-comer going into the collegiate ranks this year. Auburn did a great job finding Nick Eason. He did wonders with his defensive line this year, turned them into one of the best run-stopping units in the country in terms of tackles for loss. Auburn was top five for a lot of this season in terms of tackles for loss, still finished inside the top 20 in that category. Auburn did a great job of stopping the run. And then pass rushing, although it was hit and miss at times, I think part of that had to do with scheme and the fact that Auburn wouldn't blitz ever. You know, 3 against 5 is not going to work out for anybody because two guys are getting double-teamed. So you break it down. I think Nick Eason did a wonderful job, and this is a compliment to what he did at Auburn, the fact that Clemson said, hey, you want to come coach here? And I think it really is as simple as this is a move up for him in the coaching ranks. And that's not a knock on Auburn. It's just looking at this objectively, Clemson has had a lot better of a run over the last 10 years than Auburn has. And if he does really well at Clemson, he's probably going to get a shot at a defensive coordinator position or a head coach position if that's what he wants to do. Or maybe he just wants to be defensive line coach over there. But I do think this is as simple as he wants to go to Clemson. Now, as far as Auburn's, you know, culture or where this thing is going from here out with Coach Harsin, this is my take on the situation. 1 year ago, Auburn made a gamble when they fired Gus Malzahn. They rolled the dice and said, we want to go and get a coach that can give us more than 8 wins per season, which is what Auburn was averaging about with Gus Malzahn at Auburn. He was averaging 4 or 5 losses per year, even on his great seasons like 2017. When he would beat Alabama, he would still lose 4 games, right? And so Auburn rolled the dice, saying we're willing to take this risk in hopes that we can reach the promised land. That was the goal for that move. And after one season of Brian Harsin, it is still uncertain as to what direction this is going to go, just like it was a year ago when they first made the hire. Nobody really knew a whole lot about the guy when they brought him in. Nobody knew how this was going to work, considering he was coming from the state of Idaho. Nobody knew how this was going to work out. And I still think after 1 year, we are at a fork in the road in Auburn football history where Auburn could go down a good path, Auburn could go down a bad path. And, even if Auburn goes down a good path in this situation with the way that people view things, that road could even split and you could be right back at where you were with Gus Malzahn winning 8 games per year and losing 4 or 5, right? So this thing could still go in several different directions, and I don't think we have enough information at the moment to say that it's going to be a disaster or that it's going to be a success. It's okay to say we don't know what's going to happen. That is my take right now. I completely understand the folks out there to say a lot of negative things that have happened in the last month and a half or so. It's put Auburn in a bad position. They've got to dig themselves out of a little bit of a hole. I also understand the other side of it that says, well, this coaching staff has dug themselves out of a hole already and from a recruiting standpoint this year and the last with their first two recruiting classes. Why can't they do that here this offseason with the transfer portal? So I'm going to wait to make any judgments, any conclusions, any type of predictions about 2022's football season until several months from now after we've seen some guys go through the transfer portal. But now's not the time to panic. And I know Spectre wasn't panicking, and I know most Auburn fans probably are not panicking. The reality is, don't panic yet. Just wait. Let's see where this thing goes. They very well may end up getting everything that they need in the transfer portal and do even better next year. And then the hot seat is cooled off, and folks are optimistic going into 2023. Going into our final segment now of the show. I'm going to do this every day. It is called Final Take, my last take of the show here on the Wednesday edition. Final Take. All right, guys, this is going back to something that I talked about earlier on Hot Take Wednesday. Alabama is going to win the national championship by 10 or more points on Monday. And later on this week, I'm going to tell you who I think Auburn fans should be rooting for in the national championship. And no, it is not the asteroid or a tie, which honestly would be optimal, but the national championship's not ending in a tie, so you might as well either not watch it or you better have a rooting interest, because I do think there is a lesser of the two evils. But my final take of the day is Alabama's going to win the national championship by 10 or more points on Monday. Nothing happened in the college football playoff semifinals to make you think the result of the SEC championship game had been altered in any way. I still think the Alabama passing game is going to make the throws necessary to win, and Stetson Bennett will not. Alabama's defensive line with Will Anderson Jr. off the edge is still going to wreck things for Georgia up front. They're going to stop the run. A lot of pressure is going to fall on Stetson Bennett, and who knows, maybe they snap the ball off of his face again. Nonetheless, Alabama, I think, is going to win by 11. 35-24 is my prediction in the national championship game. I'll stick to that all throughout the week. That's it for the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place. You know where to find us.